Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program. Film's our theme in this hour, and first up, it's great to welcome Tim Cronin. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you, John.
Now, Tim, you're not only the deputy editor of Eureka Street, you also write film criticism for them. Give us your list for the big contenders for this year's Academy Awards, which are taking place in the next few hours.
Yeah, sure. Look, I think that the really big contender here is Steven Spielberg's biopic of Abe Lincoln, which has received 12 nominations. But I think there are a few others that are up there. Certainly Ben Affleck's Argo, Zero Dark Thirty, the film about the hunt for Osama bin Laden, Life of Pi, Amour, which is a French language film, Les Miserables, the adaptation of the stage musical, I think are all certainly up there.
Well, let's talk about two or three of them in as much time as we've got. The most explicitly religious one of these is, of course, Life of Pi, which its opening grab line is, "I'm going to tell you a story that will make you believe in God."
Mm-hmm, indeed.
And the problem is, it's very difficult to talk about whether it works, because in doing it, you're in some way involved in giving the game away.
Yeah, that is very true. This film is adapted from a novel from 2001 by a Canadian novelist named Yann Martel. Basically, it's about a teenage boy from India who becomes shipwrecked and lost at sea. His only company on the lifeboat is a Bengal tiger named Richard Parker. The first part of the film deals with Pi's life as a child, and in particular his various religious explorations. He's born into a Hindu culture, but to very rationalist or atheist parents, really. But as he sort of grows, he becomes touched by some of the teachings of Christianity and also of Islam, and all of these things start to feed into his worldview and his conception of the universe and of God.
Yes, and we can take ourselves a little way into the story. He's on a shipwreck journey in a lifeboat with a tiger, and this becomes the venue for an exploration of the world and the self and the mysteries of the universe.
Absolutely. I see this almost as a kind of journey of mystical formation for Pi. As a child, he's done sort of the academic side of studying and thinking about God, if you like. And this very quite grueling experience that he has on the lifeboat really gives substance to a lot of his spiritual worldview that he's sort of laid the groundwork for as a child.
The real question is, does it work? I mean, this is an immense challenge to take on an internal journey via this means. Do you think the director, Ang Lee, pulls it off?
Well, I think, to me, the big achievement of this film, I mean, Ang Lee, the director of films such as Brokeback Mountain and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, is very much known for his visual panache. And this is, visually, this is a really beautiful film. It's composed really as quite a luscious piece of visual art.
And I think it actually needs 3D, doesn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's a treat to see this film on big screen and in 3D. And I think that what Ang Lee has done really successfully is actually by having this really beautiful imagery for the viewer to sort of become immersed in and reflect upon, he actually really involves the viewer in the mystical dimensions of this journey that Pi is on.
Yes, and the question that's left really for the viewer to grapple with at the end is, has the film achieved what that opening question suggests? I'm going to tell you a story that will make you believe in God. And we're left to grapple with that as the audience, really, aren't we?
Indeed, yeah.
Let's move on to the ethical plane now, and the most complex, or one of the two most complex ethical conundrums, Zero Dark Thirty. Catherine Bigelow has been criticised for being too standoffish when it comes to the issue of torture, particularly waterboarding, and seems to be almost agnostic on whether it's a correct thing to use waterboarding. Some have suggested she's even gone so far as to endorse it implicitly.
Look, I think that that would be too strong to say that she endorses it. Certainly, the film contains some very graphic portrayals of these torture processes, and her protagonist, Maya, a CIA agent played by Jessica Chastain, certainly seems to swallow her natural human response, which is quite a compassionate response, and just steel herself and accept this as a pragmatic necessity, I suppose, to tracking down these dangerous figures such as Osama bin Laden. I actually think that the ethical distance that Bigelow creates is actually a real strength of the film, and the same is true of her previous film, The Hurt Locker, set during the Iraq War. I think that by holding the events at an ethical distance and not either condemning or condoning them explicitly, she actually engages the viewer ethically on a very deep level, because the viewer then is left to constantly question, you know, is this right? Is this just?
Yes, the other criticism is, of course, that she made deliberate factual errors. That is, in linking explicitly the torture with the capture of, or the assassination of bin Laden, encourages one in a certain context to think that torture's okay.
Look, I can see the merit of that criticism. I think that this is a question that's always going to plague films that are supposedly based in history or based on true events, because decisions need to be made, dramatic and artistic decisions need to be made to make a story work on that level. And sometimes I think the viewer needs to always take these things with a grain of salt. I do think that this is a really excellent film. I'm very surprised that Bigelow actually was overlooked for a Best Director nomination for this film. It was nominated for Best Picture, but she wasn't nominated for Best Director, which I think it actually shows her as being a very assured and very skillful filmmaker and storyteller.
And the other film that's very interesting in this direction, it's a political film, but set 20 years ago, international politics, the Iran hostage crisis, Ben Affleck's movie Argo.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a real cracker of a film. It's a very gripping and tightly constructed and highly entertaining thriller, directed by Ben Affleck, who proves once again that he's probably going to be remembered as a very good filmmaker, if he's not remembered quite so fondly for his slightly patchier acting career. The big problem for me with this particular film is that it is very American-centric. I mean, it's set during the 1979 uprising in Iran, and these are very significant events historically and culturally for Iran. And yet, what we're presented with is a film that focuses solely on the plight of six besieged Americans, and the Iranians themselves become this sort of diffused, homogenous threat in the background.
Yes, cartoon cutouts almost at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's guilty of a bit of marginalisation there that is a bit unfortunate, because it actually is a very well-made and very entertaining film.
Structurally, it's quite interesting in that the opening titles and the closing titles form an integral part of the film, and also the way in which the wonderful caricatures of John Goodman and Alan Arkin almost provide comic relief in a very dramatic way.
Most definitely. John Goodman and Alan Arkin play a makeup artist and a producer in Hollywood, who both team up, I suppose, with Ben Affleck's CIA agent character to help him execute this cover story in order to extract the six Americans who are trapped in Iran. They're really terrific. They're a treat to watch. They're a great double team, and both very fine actors with excellent comic capabilities as well.
For all that strength, I found one weakness for me was getting towards the end of the film, and it plays to your observations about the way the Iranian characters are portrayed. It almost drops into Hollywood will they or won't they formulae for about the last 10 minutes, which I felt, given the integrity of the rest of the film, was a bit of a letdown.
That is very true. At the same time, I think that there's a particular skill to the way that that last sequence is constructed, and the cross-cutting between the heroes who are in the plane racing down the runway and the villainous Iranians who are chasing after them and trying to stop them before they get away, in terms of building tension and making it a very suspenseful climax. It's skillfully done, even though it's somewhat cliched, as you say.
The other movie, of course, is the great historical epic, Lincoln. And in many ways, this film is courageous because it actually takes what could be seen as a giant opportunity to create great battle scenes and makes it about intimate politics, particularly backdoor political machinations. The film's been almost universally praised.
Yeah, definitely. The approach to Lincoln is very interesting. It's not a Hollywood biopic. As such, it focuses on very specifically on the period where Lincoln is trying to get the 13th Amendment to abolish slavery passed in the House of Representatives. And the screenplay is written really as a political drama. It focuses on the minutiae of the political process and the sometimes rather shady tactics that Lincoln uses to get this undoubtedly very just bill passed.
What about performances? How do you rate Daniel Day-Lewis?
Daniel Day-Lewis as Lincoln is really terrific, and I think he's a shoo-in to win the Best Actor Oscar. Tommy Lee Jones almost steals the show from Daniel Day-Lewis. Tommy Lee Jones appears as Thaddeus Stevens, the leader of the Radical Republicans, who becomes a somewhat abrasive ally to Lincoln in the quest to overthrow slavery. He brings a lot of overt passion to this quest. Tommy Lee Jones is terrific. I think he'll probably lose the Oscar to Christoph Waltz, personally, but yeah, we'll see.
One of the things that struck me about the film was that it's in that what has now become almost the repertory Steven Spielberg style for this sort of film. It's told at a very elegiac pace, and despite the superbly well done intimacy and of the political machinations, and no criticism with that, you still get the feeling that this is almost the HBO Steven Spielberg formula applied here, and that in the hands of another director, the very same script could have been quite differently told.
Look, I think that's 100% right. Spielberg is a very gifted filmmaker, and he's a master of cinematic storytelling that's very entertaining and very emotionally gripping. I personally am not a great fan of most of his more earnest, sort of serious films. I think his style is a bit heavy-handed. He tends to bring a sort of a sense of sentimentality, and as you said, there's an elegiac quality as well to Lincoln, which is rather irksome, in my opinion.
Well, let's finally turn to the last of the great religious epics, and written originally deliberately as a religious epic and told on the musical stage and now on the screen, Les Mis, with a couple of significant Australian performances. One observation about Les Mis is its form as a book and then translated on is almost the classic structural form that is the battle between justice and mercy. It's as old as the Old Testament and continues to be in movies up into Batman. Here is a particular telling of it. How did you respond to it as a movie?
Yeah, look, I think that's very true. I love this movie. I am a fan of film musicals, and I thought this was done very, very well for the most part. Your description of it as a religious epic, I think, is very apt. I think what we're offered here are two central characters who both sort of see themselves as men of God. One of them is Jean Valjean, who's played very, very wonderfully by Hugh Jackman. Obviously a trained and excellent singer, as well as being a very good actor. Jean Valjean is a released convict who sort of spends the duration of his life and of the film trying to seek atonement for various wrongdoings in his past. His foil along the way is Javert, who's played by Russell Crowe, whose performances certainly have merit, but who sings rather like a glass of mud. Javert is a lawman, a rather menacing lawman who makes it his life's work to try to bring Valjean undone. Javert is a man of God in sort of the Old Testament kind of mold. He's coldly righteous and has this sort of Old Testament sternness about the way he views the world. Javert sings a song called Stars. It's Javert's big song for the show, and he sort of articulates this sense of divine order and justice, which is what he's trying to bring to bear against Jean Valjean.
Mixed up in the dirty world of compassion, Jean Valjean, the murky world of compassion.
Absolutely, yeah. Jean Valjean is on this constant quest to basically live a life of grace and treat people with empathy and generosity, and there's an act of mercy shown to him quite early in the story by a priest. Jean Valjean actually betrays the priest quite badly, and the priest continues to show him mercy, and this ends up being a very formative experience for Jean Valjean. And I think Jean Valjean's this effort of his to live with grace and live with empathy actually becomes increasingly difficult for Javert to dismiss as the film goes on.
One thing that's very interesting to me about the film, particularly its translation from being a stage musical, in a stage musical you are distanced from the characters and the music by 60, 80, 100 feet. And the actors project across that distance. And so there is an emotional distance between you and the stage, which the music is used to bridge. Watching that as a movie, I found the emotional intensity so strong, particularly with Fantine's song, Anne Hathaway, which comes relatively early, that I'm so emotionally wrung out, I've got nothing left for the rest of the movie.
That is really a great strength of this film adaptation. Tom Hooper, the director, he oversaw some very good performances, obviously, a few years ago in the film The King's Speech. And in Les Mis, he really captures the more intimate moments of the story impeccably. A number of things he does, such as he has all his performers sing live on set. Usually when you watch a movie musical, the actors are all lip-syncing to a backing tape, whereas having the actors sing live means that they're constantly emoting as they're singing. And he puts the camera right up close, right up in their faces often, so that you do see sort of every nuance of that performance. And as you said, that a really devastating performance by Anne Hathaway of the song I Dreamed a Dream is an outstanding highlight of the film.
Well, I just found it so emotionally riveting, or just wrenching, that I just felt exhausted for much of the rest of the film, because you've got so many of those moments. And because they're told shown in close-up, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it could sustain itself for me. Now, Tim, give us your final what you think's going to win.
Okay, sure. I'm tipping Daniel Day-Lewis for Best Actor and Argo for Best Film, Spielberg for Best Director.
Tim Cronet, thanks so much for joining us. This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.